So I want you to picture artificial intelligence in a courtroom. Just visualize it for a second. If you're like most people, you probably just pictured like a scene straight out of a sci-fi movie, you know, a robot judge with a glowing red eye sitting up on the bench, scanning the room and banging this digital gavel to render some cold, calculated verdict.
Right, yeah. It's a super dramatic, highly visual concept, and it's really dominated the whole conversation. I mean, the idea of a machine rendering a final verdict while human lawyers just, look on in horror. It's a very easy narrative for people to grasp.
It is, but the reality of what's actually happening in the justice system right now is, well, so much quieter. It's mundane. It's happening entirely behind closed doors. And most importantly, it's already here. So today's deep dive is exploring exactly how artificial intelligence has slipped into the federal judicial workflow.
Which is fascinating, honestly.
It really is. We're taking our stack of sources today, which is anchored by this incredibly detailed April 2026 article by Eric Sanders from the Sanders Firm. It's titled, AI is already inside the federal courts. Legal purism is not a governance strategy. And we're extracting the signal from the noise here.
Exactly. Because the system is currently operating in this weird state of denial, just, clinging to the belief that human judgment remains entirely isolated from machine influence. And that's creating massive blind spots.
Right. And our mission today is to understand why the legal community's ongoing debate over, like, whether to allow AI in the courts is basically a lost cause. We'll look at why clinging to this idea of legal purism is actually endangering the justice system and how courts absolutely must pivot to governing this new reality.
Yeah, they really have no other choice at this point.
No, they don't. And I want to say this directly to you listening. Whether you're a lawyer navigating these courts or maybe a business owner drafting contracts or just a citizen who relies on the rule of law to function, you really need to care about this. The way federal courts decide what is true fundamentally shapes your world.
It dictates the environment we all operate in every single day.
Exactly. Okay, so let's unpack this. We have to start by completely dismantling that false premise we just talked about, the fear of the robo judge. Because Sanders points out that this extreme binary fear actually blinded the legal profession to how AI really entered the system.
Yeah, the profession was basically busy guarding the front door against a sci-fi Terminator, right?
Mm.
While the technology just quietly walked in through the delivery entrance and set up shop in the back room.
That's such a good way to put it. And we have data on this now, right?
We do. We can look directly at the data Sanders cites from a 2026 random sample survey of federal judges. And, even with a 22.3% response rate, which granted means we shouldn't overstate the total saturation,
Sure.
the threshold facts are still just impossible to ignore. Over 60% of the responding judges used at least one AI tool.
Wow. Over 60%.
Yeah, and 22.4% are using it on a weekly or daily basis.
Oh.
But the critical insight here is that they aren't using it to make final decisions. The primary use is entirely upstream,
Upstream meaning.
like legal research, document review, drafting preliminary memos, and organizing administrative workflows.
Okay, think of it like a restaurant kitchen. The entire legal profession has been terrified of like a robot head chef rolling in, kicking out all the humans and creating the menu from scratch.
Right.
But while everyone was hyper fixated on the head chef, the AI quietly became the sous chef. It's in the back, it's chopping the vegetables, prepping the sauces, filtering the raw ingredients.
Exactly. And if those raw inputs are distorted or tainted in any way, the human head chef's final dish is still going to be fundamentally flawed, even if a human plated it and carried it out to the dining room themselves.
Right, so the adjudicative vulnerability, like the actual danger to the justice system, isn't in the final ruling at all.
No, it's in what Sanders calls the architecture of perception.
The architecture of perception.
Yeah. AI is mediating what facts are foregrounded. It determines which precedents are surfaced and which ones get buried. It compresses these really complex, highly nuanced chronologies into simple little bullet points.
We need to ground that phrase, architecture of perception, because it sounds, a bit academic. Think of it like a camera lens or a filter. If you put a red filter over a camera lens, the photographer is still the one taking the picture, but everything they see is tinted red.
That's a great analogy.
The AI is the filter. It shapes the cognitive landscape of the case long before a judge applies their formal legal judgment.
Right. If the AI sous chef hands a judge a slaughter reduction of, say, a 500-page contested evidentiary record, the judge's perception of reality is already altered. A self-defense case with incredible situational nuance, might just get summarized by an algorithm into a binary altercation occurred bullet point. And suddenly the nuance that wins or loses the case is just stripped away.
But wait, this brings up a huge question. Why did highly skeptical, deeply trained federal judges let this technology into their kitchen in the first place? I mean, these are people whose entire professional identity is built on questioning evidence.
Well, Sanders argues it came disguised in a familiar uniform. The survey shows that judges aren't primarily sitting at their desks relying on public, general-use chatbots.
Like ChatGPT.
Right. They use those sometimes,
yeah.
But typically just for non-case tasks, like drafting CLE outlines or speech preparation. For the real work, they prefer legal-specific tools that are already embedded in the legacy infrastructure they've used for decades.
Oh, like Westlaw and stuff.
Exactly. We're talking about platforms like Westlaw, AI Assisted,
yeah.
And CoCounsel. What's fascinating here is the psychology of institutional adoption. Institutions, especially historically conservative ones like federal courts, they don't absorb new technologies in the abstract. They absorb them through existing channels of trust.
I have to push back on that a bit, though. Aren't these judges trained to spot flaws? Like, why are they dropping their guard just because a tool has a familiar logo on it? It feels like taking a highly experimental, completely unpredictable engine and dropping it into your old trusted car.
Yeah.
And because the steering wheel feels the same and the dashboard looks the same, you completely forget you're driving something untested and potentially really dangerous.
That's exactly what happens. Familiarity breeds complacency. When an AI tool is packaged inside a legal database that a judge has relied on since law school to pull case law, it just doesn't trigger alarms. It feels like an incremental software update, you know? Just a mere feature enhancement.
So they don't see it as a paradigm shift?
No. The user doesn't experience it as a leap into machine reasoning. They experience it as their trusty research tool simply getting faster. And this masks the radical epistemic risk involved.
Epistemic risk, meaning a risk to how we fundamentally know what is actually true.
Precisely. A user might approach a public chatbot with extreme caution, right?
Mm-hmm.
Verifying every single output. But they approach their trusted legal platform with professionalism's version of a relaxed guard.
Yeah.
And a professionally branded interface does not magically eliminate the risk of a generative AI model hallucinating a case or stripping away vital context.
And here's where it gets really interesting.
Yeah.
This false sense of security isn't just sitting with the judge at the very top of the hierarchy.
Right.
It trickles down into the entire collaborative machinery of the court.
Oh, absolutely.
Because there's this persistent myth of solitary judging, right? The idea that a judge sits alone in a quiet room thinking deep thoughts and out pops a brilliant ruling. But federal adjudication is a massive institutional production. You've got law clerks, staff attorneys, judicial assistants.
And the survey reflects that distributed workflow. Nearly 40% of judges reported AI use by others in their chambers. And Sanders points out that judges are likely underreporting this because they simply do not know all the ways their clerks are experimenting with generative tools.
Which leads to the most chilling anecdote in this entire stack of sources.
Yeah.
It's just wild. A law clerk, purely out of curiosity, used an AI tool to draft a legal memo. The AI cited 11 cases in that memo, and 10 of them were fake.
Yep. 10 out of 11 citations were complete fabrications, what the legal community calls zombie cases.
It's entirely made up. And you know what's crazy? It wasn't some malicious conspiracy. It was just a clerk looking for a little convenience.
Right. And the flaw in legal purism is entirely exposed by that scenario. Legal purism dictates that the justice system will simply abstain from AI and maintain pure human judgment.
Which sounds noble.
Sure. It sounds great. A judge can hold the strictest personal morals against AI in the world. But if a 25-year-old clerk uses an AI tool to summarize a massive docket at 11:20 p.m. on a Tuesday, the shadow procedure has already taken root in that chamber.
Shadow procedure being the informal, undocumented ways work actually gets done behind the scenes rather than the official rules on the books.
Exactly.
I mean, think about the stakes here for a second. If you're a citizen whose entire business or even your personal freedom depends on a federal court ruling, the court might be evaluating your life based on a fiction generated by a chatbot, just because a clerk wanted to save 30 minutes of reading.
Because chambers function through trust, informality, and inherited custom. A judge trusts their clerk to do the reading. But in the AI era, those features are massive liabilities. You cannot audit trust.
You really can't.
Informal assumptions about what a clerk probably wouldn't do are completely insufficient when the technology to shortcut hours of grueling work is sitting right on their desktop.
Right. And because these unwritten honor systems are failing, as we see with those 10 hallucinated zombie cases, mistakes are inevitably hitting the public record. And when courts realize this is happening, they react the only way they know how. They panic.
Yeah.
Instead of building a comprehensive system, they just throw localized, reactive rules at the wall. Sanders calls this the governance gap, and he says it begins with a staggering training deficit.
The numbers reveal a profound institutional failure here. 45.5% of the responding judges said court administration had provided absolutely zero AI training.
Zero. That is wild.
Zero. And another 15.7% weren't even sure if training had been offered. So we're looking at a technology capable of altering factual records and fabricating federal law, and nearly half the judges have received no formal instruction on how to manage it.
So without unified training, the federal courts are producing this wild patchwork of reactions. Just look at the landscape Sanders highlights. You've got Judge Michael Bailson in the Eastern District of Pennsylvania, who issued a standing order back in June 2023 requiring disclosure and verification if AI is used.
Right, a fairly early response.
Yeah. But then you look at the District of Kansas in January 2026, and their standing order is deeply punitive. I mean, they're threatening monetary sanctions, disqualification, and striking filings for fabricated authorities. Meanwhile, the 2025 Administrative Office Task Force, the AO Task Force, only offered loose, quote-unquote, interim guidance.
It's all over the map.
It is. So what does this all mean? I kind of want to challenge Sanders' critique of this patchwork. Isn't a patchwork better than nothing? At least Judge Bailson and the District of Kansas are doing something to stop the bleeding while the massive federal bureaucracy tries to catch up.
Well, this raises an important question about the fundamental difference between control and governance. What those individual courts are doing is exercising control. A monetary sanction for a fake citation is a control mechanism.
Okay, I see.
A localized disclosure rule is a control. They punish a mistake after it has already happened, after the fabricated case has already been filed, read, and wasted the court's time.
Governance, then, is about preventing the hallucination from ever being drafted in the first place.
Exactly. Governance requires building an ex-ante architecture. Ex-ante meaning before the event. It means building the guardrails before the car even starts moving, rather than just installing airbags and hoping they deploy during a crash.
Then it makes perfect sense.
Governance defines what specific uses are approved, who is supervising the inputs, and what mandatory training must be completed before a clerk ever logs into the system. A patchwork system of reactive controls actually breeds bad behavior.
Because it creates loophole thinking. Imagine being a lawyer practicing in federal court right now. On Monday, you file in Pennsylvania and you have to sign a specific disclosure form. On Tuesday, you file in Kansas and face potential disqualification if your research tool hallucinated a single line.
Right.
And then on Wednesday, you file in a district with no standing orders at all and you just have to rely on ambient caution. The integrity of the federal judicial system should not depend on which zip code you happen to file your case in.
Exactly. That inconsistency drives courts further away from principled administration. To cure this, courts must fundamentally change how they view their responsibility. They have to move past denial and localized panic and step into disciplined administration.
And Sanders outlines a blueprint for this transition, right?
He does. And it starts with task distinction.
Okay, hold on. I want to clarify this concept of task distinction because I was a bit lost on this part. Isn't using AI for legal research essentially the exact same thing as using it to draft a final opinion? I mean, in both cases, the user types a prompt and the machine generates text based on its training data. Why does the court need to treat them differently?
Because the function and the risk are entirely different. Using AI to triage your legal research is like using a metal detector to find a needle in a haystack. It helps you locate the raw materials quickly.
Okay.
But drafting the final opinion is taking those raw materials and weaving them into binding law that affects human lives. Courts must stop treating AI as a monolith and define boundaries based on the function being performed. Research triage requires one set of guardrails. Synthesizing a contested evidentiary record requires much stricter oversight.
That makes a lot of sense, which leads right into his next principle. Verification has to be a non-delegable duty. Sanders makes a really critical distinction here. How does a clerk or a judge actually verify an AI output? Because just Googling the case name to see if it exists isn't enough, right?
Right. Verification cannot just be checking a citation's pulse. A user can't simply type the citation into a database, see that the case name pops up, and assume the AI summary is accurate.
Because it might have twisted what the case actually said.
Exactly. True verification means physically reading the holding of the case and ensuring the AI did not flatten the nuance or misapply the context. The duty to ensure the law actually says what the machine claims it says, that cannot be delegated back to the machine.
Wow. But that level of rigor requires structural changes in the chamber, which brings us to supervisory accountability. Judges need to know exactly what their clerks are doing. If the judicial workflow is distributed across multiple staff members, the governance of that workflow also has to be distributed and documented.
There need to be written explicit protocols for every chamber. And those protocols are useless without the final pillar Sanders proposes, mandatory training.
Yeah, the lack of training is just glaring.
It is. Courts cannot demand perfect rigor from external lawyers, threatening them with sanctions for AI mistakes, while simultaneously giving their own internal clerks and staff a free pass on formal training.
It's a massive double standard, and it really undermines the court's moral authority. You know, reading through this blueprint, it immediately reminded me of the rules of evidence. Think about the history of the legal system. Centuries ago, when forged paper documents and unverified hearsay became a massive problem, courts didn't just throw up their hands in defeat.
No, of course not.
And they didn't ban the use of paper.
They built a system to govern the risk. They created incredibly complex, highly specific rules of admissibility, authentication, and cross-examination. AI requires its own modern rules of evidence.
I love that framing. If we connect this to the bigger picture, what Sanders is ultimately arguing for is institutional candor. The courts have to publicly acknowledge that AI is already inside the building, you know, working in the kitchen. If they continue to speak as though the problem only exists at the margins or only among careless external lawyers, they lose their credibility.
Legitimacy requires candor. The public needs absolute confidence that the institutions wielding coercive state power actually understand the tools that are shaping their decisions.
Absolutely. So let's recap the journey we've taken through the source material today. We started by busting the myth of the sci-fi robo-judge, revealing the much quieter, much more pervasive reality of the AI sous chef already working upstream in the judicial workflow.
Right. And we explored how this technology snuck past the skepticism of judges by hiding inside the familiar, trusted interfaces of legacy legal software.
Yep. Then we examine how distributed chambers and a reliance on informal trust lead directly to systemic failures. Like that anecdote of the 10 hallucinated cases in a single memo.
Such a wild story.
It really is. And finally, we broke down why the current strategy of localized reactive patchwork rules has to be replaced by a unified ex-ante governance model. A model built on functional task distinction, rigorous verification mechanics, and mandatory training.
The justice system simply cannot afford to operate in a governance gap anymore.
No, it can't. Which leaves us with a final thought for you to chew on as we wrap up. Sanders highlights that federal courts are institutions literally designed from the ground up to obsess over procedure, verifiable truth, and traceable authority. Yet even they are currently struggling to govern AI's invisible influence over their own internal workflows.
Yeah.
If the ultimate arbiters of truth in our society are playing catch-up and operating in this reactive governance gap, what does that mean for the rest of society?
It really forces us to look at every other institution we rely on seriously. How confident should you be in the risk assessments, the internal memos, and the executive decisions currently being made in the hospitals, the corporations, and the government agencies that govern your daily life? If the federal courts are struggling to manage the invisible sous chef who is prepping the ingredients everywhere else.
Something to really think about.
It is. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Take a look around your own professional life this week. And, you know, don't be afraid to question the invisible filters in your own workflow. We'll see you next time.